They won't even see me tomorrow.
That will be sorry, boss.
It'd be the best thing in the world. Nobody in my family would ever have to worry about anything ever again.
Very helpful. It only takes one.
I'm going to instant retirement. Yeah, and I'm going to travel the world, and I'm taking all my homies, everybody in the store going with me. All the guys I work with, they're going to go instant retirement.
So how about it? If you want a whole pile of money in the lottery, would you instantly retire? Kate Delaney hanging out with you, America. The biggest buzz in your backyard and mine had to be over the lottery. $579.9 million by the time of the drawing. It was lottery frenzy all over the United States. In the states that offer Powerball, those that didn't found themselves inundated with neighbors from other states who came in to buy some tickets. There were reports of people waiting in line for hours. I went in and out. It took me 3 minutes, although there was a woman standing there blocking everybody on the phone frantically like a crazed gambler trying to get important big bad numbers from somebody on the other side. I don't know if she won the lottery. I know I didn't. 5, 23, 16, 22, 29, Powerball 6. Some people in the discussion now over the lottery say that this is a way to hoodwink Americans, that you become victim to the big shell game, that it's just a swindle since you have such low odds of actually winning. I'm going to disagree. Unless you play the lottery constantly, and we're talking to the tune of hundreds of dollars. I have seen and heard about people who do that. I've seen people in line where they have huge wads of cash. And I could be wrong, and maybe they're already millionaires, and so that huge wad of cash isn't that big of a deal to them. It just looked that way to me. But if people are taking their whole paychecks and doing this, or they think this is really the road to retirement for real, that's ridiculous. It is like getting struck by lightning. But everybody, I think, people need to sometimes let go of reality and believe in a fantasy. So why not you? Why couldn't you get lucky and hit the lottery? If you've ever heard any of previous winners talk, often it is the person who, in a frenzied moment because the jackpot is so high, they buy a couple of dollars worth of lottery tickets and they really haven't played very much, and then they win and it's a game changer. If you won the jackpot, would you instantly be happy and would all your problems be gone? No, because you'd have new problems. But money can't buy happiness, but it can buy comfort. Think about it. Even with your health, you could go to the Mayo Clinic twice, three, four times a year, and just get a full-on physical. Get every test that you could possibly get to find out, ooh, you got early cancer coming on, you have this, you have that. You could nip things immediately before they get out of control because you wouldn't sweat out the bills. So you could go to the best doctors in the world and get initial tests for things. Maybe once a year, but who cares? You get my point here. And then the extravagance of it all. Take wild vacations, buy whatever car you wanted to buy with cold, hard cash, have several houses, and maybe you're more philanthropic and you start your own charity and you help people get on their feet and you teach them how to do things. Or who knows? You send kids through school all the way up through college, set up trust funds. It's fun to fantasize and let go of reality. I don't see the swindle unless people are so sucked into this they really, truly believe, and I know there are people like that, that this is what's going to make them wealthy. If they just buy enough lottery tickets, and of course, the answer is no, that's not going to work. They might feel like they won the lottery in a different way, and the world will certainly react to it. The United States was not on board with this, but the Palestinians are almost certain to win UN recognition as a state on Thursday. Supposedly that'll happen. The United States' closest ally in the Middle East, as we know, Israel, was pretty aggressive in stopping the General Assembly vote, which the Palestinians view as a historic step in their movement toward recognition around the world. They say they need UN recognition in the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, the lands that Israel captured in 67, to be able to negotiate with Israel. And statehood could also be open for a way for possible war crimes charges against the Israelis at the International Crime Court. So it's looking good, looking positive that this is a real possibility. The Israeli government not happy, saying that the spirit and the word of which signed agreements to solve issues through negotiations had broken off before a few years ago, and increasing the Palestinians' role in the United Nations is absolutely the wrong approach. But this is big. Even Republican Senator Orrin Hatch filed an amendment to a defense bill Wednesday that would eliminate funding for the United Nations if the General Assembly changes Palestine's status. Because then they're recognized. They're recognized as an entity across the world. And that's not happening now. So a yes vote. A number of countries have said they're going to say yes. You know who they are? France, Spain, Norway, Denmark, and Switzerland. The opposition, U.S., Israel, Germany, Canada, the Netherlands, and Australia. Woo! Got to follow that one closely. Coming up on America Tonight, a couple of great guests. We're going to talk about solar power and green energy versus natural resources, and what a difference the coal-fired plants make in the United States, and natural gas versus wind energy. Not saying eliminate it, but how many people can afford it, and is it offsetting costs there because of what it costs ultimately when you get the electricity bill? People are blindsided. They don't realize how much they're paying for those kilowatts. So Teresa Platt's going to join us and has some interesting things to talk about in comparisons to some of the natural resources versus some of the green alternatives. Besides Teresa, we're going to talk to Dave Blewett, who is a former player for SMU. He was there when they got walloped by the death penalty. You know, we talked about Penn State this year and how many people bailed realizing they weren't going to bowl games and weren't going to get quite the exposure. He talks about what that was like when it happened to him in the 80s when SMU was given the death penalty in college football. So hang with us. Lots coming down the road.
Preparedness is simple when you have the right stuff. And with the looming threat of economic collapse and possible service interruption, it's time to get the best-in-class preparedness stuff at DisasterStuff.com. DisasterStuff.com has been serving smart preppers for over 15 years with quality products like Berkey water filters. DisasterStuff.com is the official Berkey in-stock shipping center. And as always, free shipping on all Berkey products. Stock up on water barrels and accessories. Get Country Living or Wonder Mill grain mills, Excalibur food dehydrators, Tatler reusable canning lids, Sun Oven solar cookers, EMP bags to protect sensitive electronics, and don't be without your Life Straw personal water filter, all from DisasterStuff.com. Preparedness is simple with the right stuff from DisasterStuff.com. freedom through self-reliance and personal responsibility.
Hi, this is Peter Kronschnabel from Midas Resources. As you know, federal government spending is at an all-time high, and inflation will be a direct result of the spending policy. European government and central bank spending policies have put the European Union on the brink of collapse. What are you doing right now to protect yourself financially? Are your assets working for you or against you? One thing is certain. Having physical possession of gold and silver will guarantee that no matter what happens to our economy or the dollar, your investment will never be worthless. And it will protect you from that hidden tax, inflation. If you've been thinking about investing in physical possession of precious metals or having an IRA in precious metals, I can help. Call me today, Peter Kronschnabel, at 800-686-2237, extension 108. And I'll take the time to personally put together a portfolio designed to protect what you've worked so hard for. Call 800-686-2237, extension 108. You've worked hard your whole life, and I want to work hard for you. Call Peter at 800-686-2237, extension 108.
Here it comes, another cold and flu season. Get ready for it and save now during the pre-winter sale at HerbalHealer.com. Don't be without powerful natural flu fighters like elderberry power capsules. They support the immune system and they have antiviral properties. Another powerful antiviral is olive leaf capsules, highly recommended by Herbal Healer Academy. Also on sale is physician strength oregacillin, a savior for the lungs. It fights bacteria, virus, and fungus. Our famous four herb capsules are a gentle liver cleanser and can be taken daily. Also featured this winter are the homeopathic detoxes, liver, kidney, lung, lymph, whole body, and brain detox on sale. And remember, as always, new customers get a free 128-page catalog with your order. Log on and hit the pre-winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
Welcome back to America Tonight. I'll tell you what, how many times do we talk about natural resources and where are we headed with natural resources? We're so not in the game in so many ways. I saw this from earlier today. One of my buddies on the Hill sent me a text about Senator Landrieu saying that Congress might actually have to step in on natural gas exports. Well, here's the thing. Natural gas is such a boon to so many areas, but yet there is a real push-pull over it. And we have in the wings with us Teresa Platt. She's the National Center for Public Policy Research's new environmental director. And she just did a piece that I happened to catch that was great on what are the problems ahead with the abundant natural resources tossed aside for greener alternatives. This is perfect because we just got into it about solar power and tax breaks and all that kind of stuff. Teresa, first off, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kate. So glad you asked me to come on.
All right, so the natural resources, natural gas certainly is one of them. We're seeing that people's towns' fates and fortunes are turning around. There's a place called Cleburne, Texas, just a little tiny town in Texas that now has made so many profits, so much profit off of natural gas, and the lives of so many people, education, et cetera, has turned around there because of what they found with natural gas. But there's a real push-pull thing going on with natural gas. I don't get it. Why is that?
Well, it's they've developed the horizontal drilling, so you can take the natural gas deposits from underneath the ground a long way away, and so it requires just a really small footprint. So a lot of the farmers are giving access to their land and allowing the horizontal drilling to get those deposits out. And, of course, you know, it's a wonderful energy resource, and they're making good money. So we have all these fossil fuel reserves in the United States, and now we can access them from private property. If you had to rely on the federal government lands, we wouldn't have anything. It just seems like it keeps being reduced every single year. So, yes, there's a natural gas boom going on all over the United States.
Yeah, and as you said, it's very small footprints on these private lands. So natural gas is a available at really cheap rates, to be honest, compared to what else we're getting for the liquefied kind of stuff that we're pulling in from other places. So it's got to be, I guess, an alternative to coal, but I say, why can't you kind of combine the two? Or does that not make sense?
Well, I think you're comparing apples and oranges when you say it's an alternative to the liquid. So you're talking about petroleum for fueling our cars.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly the natural gas is used for fueling our computers. It's an electricity resource. So you've got coal and natural gas providing probably about 70% of your electricity.
Mm.
After that, it's nuclear at about 20%.
Mm.
And after that, it's a mix. Hydro, I think, is about 5%, and you've got a little bit of wind, and solar's pathetic. It's even less than 1%. You got biomass. You got wood and corn. I did a piece on the nationalcenter.org website called Killing Old King Coal, and the very first link there links to an incredible report on where all the fossil fuels are and where energy production comes from. And so I really recommend your readers go to Killing Old King Coal by Teresa Platt at nationalcenter.org and click on that first link. You'll learn a lot. I learned a lot in the process.
Yeah, one of the things you talk about is what you pay, you know, what we pay for our bills, gas and electricity. And also you talk about the additional money, which would be in the form of what you call, which is true, the federal subsidies. And you really break it down per megawatt hour of electricity. And I wanted to go through this because the subsidies are interesting because of the fact that we're talking about greener versus the natural resources that we already have. For solar, what is it for solar?
Well, it's $775.64 per megawatt hour of electricity compared to a subsidy for coal that's about 64 cents and natural gas about 64 cents. And that's just a federal subsidy. There's probably subsidies somewhere buried at the state level, too, which you'd have to ferret out. So exactly what we're paying, it becomes very difficult to see when it doesn't show up on your energy bill every month.
Yeah. Yeah, you even talk about, too, water was like 56-something, wasn't it?
Wind. Wind is about $56 a megawatt hour. But what it doesn't calculate in is a tax benefit that wind also gets, the renewables also get. It's something called a production tax credit. And that's being discussed in Washington, D.C. right now. Wind alone, it's estimated it's about $12.2 billion. So what that calculates per megawatt hour, I don't think people have been doing the math, but they're doing it this week in Washington, D.C., because that's a lot of money. That's your tax dollars moving to wind. Is wind viable? That's the big question. Or how long do we have to subsidize it? Solar, same question. It doesn't appear to be that they make financial sense. Will they have to have tax dollars forever? Looks like it. It looks like they're just not efficient. And the most fascinating thing I found when I was writing the report up was that solar and wind, you know, the wind doesn't blow all the time. The sun doesn't shine all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So nuclear and coal and natural gas and hydro, these are all backing up solar and wind. So we're paying double because you just are not getting much bang for your buck out of solar and wind.
Yeah. The it's that real cost that you're talking about and that you start to see. And if you want an example of it, and you pointed out, we've talked to people in other countries about this. We have other people that listen to us in Europe. And Europe is seeing what's happening because what's happened to their electricity prices, Teresa?
Yeah, they're a little bit further ahead of us in this game. They've been subsidizing much longer and at much larger levels for forever, it seems. They're starting to reinvest in coal plants because it makes sense. It makes financial sense. We have, you know, these wonderful reserves of a very dense energy product. The key to coal is trying to make it more and more and more efficient so that you get a lot more out of that little lump. So, yeah, Europe's ahead of us. They're starting to back away from the subsidies. Spain discovered, I think it was all the news reports, it discovered it lost 2.2 real jobs for every heavily subsidized green job. And eventually, the whole thing just comes down. So Spain is suffering for those wrong decisions.
No, yeah. 2.2, that's crazy. So I guess as we're talking about this, is it, and as you say on the Hill, they're looking at these numbers now, crunching them. Are we really backing the wrong horse in this race? Are we looking at the wrong sectors when it comes to energy and the production of energy?
Well, I think if you're looking at taking our taxpayer dollars and saying, okay, let's figure out how to make things really work and really function, why do we ignore coal? Why do we ignore natural gas? Why do we not let coal and natural gas be produced on federal lands? Why is so much going to solar and wind when so far it's pretty lackluster performance? So, yeah, are we backing the wrong horse? Are we making the wrong decisions? I think the only way you can really see the issues and make these decisions is if you have a real accounting of the cost. And when you hide subsidies off of the power bill, it doesn't let us become educated consumers. So, yeah, I recommend this is going on. You know, talk to your elected representatives about it, and this is your bill. I mean, you're going to be paying for this. Your kids are going to be paying for this. Your kids may be working at coal-powered plants in the future. They may be working at natural gas or doing hydraulic fracking. I mean, all these things are part of our future. So go ahead, read Killing Old King Coal by Teresa Platt and look at that report. Really educate it, your kids. Pass it around to your friends. And then ask questions. I think we need some serious answers.
Yeah, and in that, to wrap this up, we talk about, you talk about, and we talk about on the show all the time, China. And you mentioned an interesting thing about China. How much coal does China use?
Oh, it's about four times what we use. I found a wonderful quote from an energy expert at the Asian Development Bank, and he said, no matter how much renewable or nuclear is in the mix, coal will remain the dominant power source. And when I looked at the numbers, when the amount of coal that we have right here in North America, I can see why. We have thousands of years worth of coal energy right underneath our feet. And natural gas, it's up there too. So, you know, we are a wealthy, wealthy country. But we have to harness these things, and we have to harness them based on real economic parameters, real financial decisions. That's impossible to see when you can't see the full cost. So this is where the federal government comes in. You have to ask for a full accounting so you can really make these decisions. And, yeah, I hope you read the report that I've linked to in my Killing Old King Coal piece, and I hope it'll help your listeners.
Thank you, Teresa. It was a pleasure talking to you. We'll talk to you again down the road.
Thanks, Kate.
Fight back this cold and flu season with the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. Why Ali-C? Because it helps your body fight viruses, bacteria, and fungi. Ali-C has been scientifically proven in double-blind studies using low doses to greatly reduce the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin, the active ingredient in crushed garlic. Studies show Ali-C is effective against MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections. One tablet of Ali-C has the equivalent of 40 cloves of garlic. Ali-C supports your body's resistance to all types of conditions and can help lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. So boost your body's resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 1-877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com for your Ali-C today.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include microplant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock. Save you money and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, listen carefully. Sweeping changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever eliminate their tax debts once and for all. And now, I can help you reduce or eliminate your tax debts and end your tax nightmare. Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I've helped thousands of people reduce and eliminate tax debts they couldn't pay. And after more than 30 years of experience dealing with the IRS, I can tell you there's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. And with the IRS's new policies, it's easier than ever to put your tax debt behind you once and for all. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. Call 800-346-6829. Learn how I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to TaxHelpOnline.com. That's TaxHelpOnline.com.
In more ways than one, it's going to be a November to remember. Going on now, and just in time for the holidays, Emergency Essentials offers a huge Mountain House sale only at BePrepared.com. All Mountain House cans are 20 to 32% off. For example, a can of Mountain House Chili Mac, regularly $25.49, is now only $17.24. Scrambled eggs with bacon, usually $31.89, now only $21.56. And save 26% on a three-day emergency kit. Or save $123 on a one-month supply of freeze-dried and dehydrated foods. Gift shoppers, check out the Katadyn Vario water filter at 26% off, or get special pricing on the Gerber suspension multi-tool and the Volcano Stove collapsible cooking combo. For details, call 800-999-1863 to experience exceptional customer service and emergency essentials low price guarantee. But hurry, the November to Remember sale ends November 30th. That's 800-999-1863. The choice is clear. Be unprepared or beprepared.com.
Nail the Score. Joining us now is Dave Blett. He has written a book about the death penalty, but not the kind of death penalty you're thinking about here on America Tonight that we've talked about so often, states that don't want it, states that do. We're talking about the college death penalty. We're talking about the NCAA putting the death stamp, the death penalty, on SMU. Dave's book is called The Pony Trap. He played for SMU during that time. Dave, thanks for popping on ATN.
Hey, thanks for having me tonight. I appreciate it.
All right, so first of all, take us back to what it was like for you previous to getting the death penalty and how excited you were playing for a really good football team, and then this happens.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, you know, I can kind of do the setup piece and get you into kind of the Wayback Machine. You know, I came out of high school in 1984, and it was a very different world. You know, no internet, and most kids, when they went off to college, they stayed fairly close. And I grew up in Colorado, but SMU, I mean, it was one of the top programs in the country. And even though we couldn't watch it on cable TV or hear about it much on the internet or anything, everybody knew what the Pony Express was, and there were some players like Eric Dickerson and Craig James. These guys were all world, and so they were able to recruit outside of the Texas market, and they got up into Colorado and other places, and the school was a great fit for me. Good academics, great city, great football. So I was completely excited to come down here and play here.
So then you come down, you play, and you just told the story of knowing that there are big names, names that people still know today. How exciting is that? And then what was it like when, was it like a bomb went off in the locker room when the word came down about the death penalty?
Yeah, it was kind of odd. I mean, we knew it was bad. When we got put on probation in 1985 for paying a particular player. And we got hit with probation pretty hard. So that was my sophomore year. But my junior year, there were some allegations that surfaced, and the way the rules had changed, if you got caught twice within a five-year period, you were eligible for this thing called the death penalty. And we'd heard about it. It was a new penalty that the NCAA came up with in 1985. But we didn't really think much of it. We didn't think they'd really use it because it just seemed too big of a penalty. I mean, so, you know, basically the allegations come out in October of 86, and, on campus, it was kind of a big turmoil. We ended up firing our coaches. We ended up firing our president. The Board of Governors was in turmoil. So that happened in October, November of 86. And then we basically sat around for 4 months just waiting to find out what would happen. We had no idea what was going on behind the scenes. And then in February of 87, you know, we get a phone call, and we're told to go to our team meeting room in our stadium on campus. And so we go in this room, and they got a little closed circuit TV set up, and they've got a feed going into the student center where they're putting on this big press conference with the NCAA and NCAA representatives and SMU representatives, and so we're watching this thing live, but we're not allowed to be there, and we can barely hear it, we can barely see it. We're crowded around the TV, and we're waiting to find out what our sentence is going to be. We thought that we'd get the death penalty, but we hoped that we wouldn't. I mean, it just didn't seem real. So they announce it. They give us a one-year penalty, killed the program, and then everything kind of blew up. We didn't know what we were going to do. We didn't know if we were going to stay, if we were going to transfer, if we were going to get coaches again. We didn't know anything, and we had no coaches or anybody to tell us anything, and no NCAA representatives came to tell us anything. So it was just a bunch of kids in a room, upset, and we had no idea what was happening. We had no idea what was coming.
Yeah, and you decided to stay. What made you decide to stay?
Well, I mean, I thought about transferring too. I mean, like any 21-year-old kid, you know, we all have dreams of how far we can go.
Yeah.
But I mean, I had 3 years at SMU. I was on track to graduate. I joined a fraternity. I was invested in the SMU community. I liked the SMU community. So I decided that I would transfer, but it would only be for a program or a school that was at least as good as SMU or better. And you know, I looked at USC, and I looked at Miami, and I looked at some other private schools in good cities, and I settled on Stanford. The NCAA was looking at USC and Miami back then, and I didn't want any more of that stuff. So Stanford was the school that I looked at. I called them. They hadn't come to campus. There'd been a bunch of coaches from around the country descended on our campus, but Stanford wasn't one of them. So I called them. And I said, hey, here's who I am. Here's what I'm looking to do. I'll send you some film. I'll fly up there on my own nickel. And they said, thanks, but no thanks. They said, Dave, don't take it personal, but all of you players are tainted by this, and we don't want that on our campus. I mean, they were nice. They were polite. And then they said goodbye. And so I hung up the phone, and I realized that was it. I mean, I made a decision that I wasn't just going to transfer anywhere, and the place that I wanted to go wasn't interested, so I decided to commit myself to SMU and academics, and so I stayed 2 more years. I graduated with 2 degrees, and that was the end of my football career.
Wow. And, it's interesting. You see what's happened since SMU and the death penalty, and you look at what has happened in other college football programs, and as you see what happened right in the high time of your college career, it hasn't happened again since then. So why is that? Is that frustrating to you to see what happened and the fact that there are other schools that definitely would have fallen into that category, but they didn't get the penalty?
Yeah, I'm mixed on the thing because, I mean, you're right. SMU was the first one that got it. There have been 29 schools who have been eligible for the death penalty since SMU. Every one of them has been given a waiver on it. They've been penalized, but they're not to that level. The NCAA, I think what they did is they realized they went too far with the SMU penalty. I mean, they can't really go back and revise the NCAA bylaws, so the death penalty legislation is still in their book, but it's very clear they're never going to use it again. It's very clear the penalty was so much more than they ever thought it would be. It didn't just hurt the team, or the guilty players. It got all the innocent players, of course, and it all the coaches and everybody who'd been fired, they were all gone, so they didn't even get touched by the penalty. So the bomb was dropped on everybody that was left behind. So the NCAA saw that, and they realized that it's a poorly written, a poorly thought out penalty, and I don't think they'll ever do it again. Like I said, 29 other schools have qualified, and they've decided not to give it to them. So there's your evidence right there.
Yeah, no kidding. So you see that happens, then I would imagine it had to have a rippling effect across the campus. Was the campus mood pretty dire? Were there black clouds floating around and people pretty upset?
You know, that's what's so funny. I mean, the world has changed so much because of cable TV and Internet. I mean, every time you flip on something, you can see something across the country or around the world. But back in the 80s, we didn't have that. And so a lot of people really don't know what happened on SMU's campus. I mean, if the same thing happened today, it would have been front page news all over the world for a long time because we had Vietnam-style protests. The entire campus had sit-ins in the main quad where they didn't go into class. They had demands that they wanted on the school for what they would do with the football program. You had 200 faculty professors sign a document saying that they didn't want quasi-professional, a.k.a. scholarship athletes, on campus anymore. I mean, it was complete turmoil, and it didn't even make the news. I mean, locally it did. If you were in Dallas, you would have seen it on some local news. But nobody even knows what happened. It was terrible. And as a student or as an athlete who decided to stay, it was pretty challenging. I mean, I'm called out by professors, you know, as I'm the reason that all these bad things are going on. Other students were like, you're the reason that my degree has been diminished. And it was challenging. And I'll tell you, if it wasn't for my fraternity and if it wasn't for some great friends, you know, I thought about dropping out. I mean, it was a really challenging time. And I am blessed that I was able to get through that semester. And then it got better. I mean, it became a regular student experience for me. But it was a lot of turmoil.
Yeah. Now we fast forward, and somebody told me that you're trying to get back into that football fighting shape and actually try to play again. What? For all the weekend warriors out there listening across America, Dave, are you crazy? What's the deal on that?
Well, I am crazy. I mean, I think the coaches think I'm crazy. The NCAA thought I was crazy. The SMU compliance department thought I was crazy. My wife thought I was crazy. But, you know, the truth is, I had a health scare. I'm 47 now. I was 45, 46 at the time. And I thought I had cancer, and so I decided I was going to get serious about getting back in shape. I'd really let myself go because you look around, a lot of ex-athletes, you know, we don't take care of ourselves so well. And I was one of those guys. But I had a health scare and started working out. And then the second thing that happened is, you know, this the ESPN has this series called 30 for 30 where they've done all these films, and there was one that was done on SMU. And somehow or other, my oldest daughter had heard something about it because the story was kind of alive again in Dallas because of that film. So my daughter says to me, "Hey, Daddy, you played football for SMU back then?" I said, "Yeah." And she says, "Did you do anything wrong? You know, I heard bad things happen there." I said, "No, baby, I didn't do anything wrong. Why?" And so, long story short is, we sat down, we watched that SMU film, and it really didn't answer her question as to what happened and did I do anything wrong. And so that started me down a path of, well, how can I answer her? So what I thought was, strangely, I'd always joked that I had my 2 years of eligibility. And, you know, if SMU was playing poorly, I was like, well, I'll just suit up and go down there and help them. I mean, what the heck? I got my eligibility. Why not? But it was always a joke. And then all of a sudden I realized, no, I wanted to prove some things. And so I did it. I got back in shape. I gained about 35 pounds. I modeled myself after the NFL combine numbers, so I'm 6'4", I'm 275, I can bench press 225 28 times. I mean, I'm stronger than I was when I was 21, and I'm as fast as when I was 21. And I ran the traps with the NCAA and the compliance department, and I went all the way through this for 8 months. And the week before practice started, you know, head coach June Jones, who'd been waffling on it, I mean, they had meetings about it, and the coaches were telling me, we don't know what he's going to do. We just don't know, because he has to bless it. And the week before practice, he said no, he wasn't going to do it. It was too risky a proposition, and they just didn't want to go there. You know, so on the upside, I'm in good shape. But on the downside, you know, I failed. I didn't make it.
But you tried, and that's the key thing. And the book is called The Pony Trap. Dave Blewett, thanks so much for coming on America tonight. Pick up the book, folks, and we wish you the best.
Hey, thank you very much.
Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what Pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
For all women and men who wish their fingernails were harder, this Christmas, wishes come true. Introducing Nails of Steel, a new revolutionary nail hardener. Nails of Steel puts muscle into your soft nails with a creamy, rich, natural herbal formula that is antifungal, hypoallergenic, and biodegradable. Just massage a drop of Nails of Steel over your natural or polished nails and go. With Nails of Steel, there's virtually no drying time. Within the first week, you'll notice your nails getting stronger to eliminate breaking, chipping, splitting, hanging nails, and fungus. Nails of Steel makes a great stocking stuffer for women or men. And right now, get 3 1-ounce bottles for only $74.95. That's about a $5 price break on each bottle that'll last you for months. Visit nailsofsteel.com. That's nailsofsteel.com. Nails of Steel. It's like a salon in a bottle.
What do you do when your propane runs out and you don't have a large amount of wood for cooking? That's when you need a Grover Rocket Stove from StockStorage.com. The Grover Rocket Stove starts easily with any combustible material, like junk mail, small twigs, leaves, weeds, or dry sagebrush. Then just add a small amount of kindling wood, and you'll be cooking entire meals in minutes. Grover Rocket Stoves are made right here in the USA and are built to last a lifetime using heavy-duty, thick-gauge steel and are painted with high-temp paint to withstand heat. Go to StockStorage.com and see three great Grover Rocket Stoves, stainless steel, heavy-duty, or our original Grover Rocket Stove for only $135. And get free shipping to the lower 48. For phone orders, call 801-361-6984 or go to StockStorage.com. That's 801-361-6984 or StockStorage.com. The original Grover Rocket Stove minimal wood use cooking stoves. Available exclusively from StockStorage.com.
Cup of coffee. Are you kidding me? You can go to McDonald's, and depending on what neighborhood you live in, because I noticed that they charge differing amounts, but you can get a cup of their Joe for about $1.60. Starbucks is offering a geisha coffee, $7 for this coffee. What does it do? Dance for you? Seriously. 16-ounce grande cup. Is the priciest brew, the Costa Rica Finca Palmiera coffee, is $40 for a half-pound bag. Therefore, to pass the cost on to you, the customer, the consumer, it is $7. Geisha. Mm-hmm. And they're offering it in 46 locations in the Northwest with expensive clover brewing machines. Is that supposed to make you feel better? Oh, the loyal customers. Look what you'll pay. $7 for some coffee. Sounds like a wild ripoff to me. What coffee is worth $7? When I read this story, it was in the Washington Post, I was like, what? Are you kidding me? It's ridiculous. Okay, this has a big price tag, hundreds of billions of dollars. What do you think costs hundreds of billions of dollars? If you were thinking military hardware or jets, you are absolutely right. Check it out. And I remember thinking that these planes were going to be really, really cool. These jets were going to be cool if they were able to pull it off. But the Marine version of the F-35 Joint Striker Fighter has been in the making for over a decade. Now, can it go past the speed of sound? That was one of the headlines I saw in the New York Times, and I was thinking, wow, you know what? How cool would that be? And they're testing it. They've been testing it, rotating the engine. You know, the engine rotates basically straight down. It glides onto the decks, they say, at 7 feet a second. 7 feet a second, that's pretty cool. So this is huge for the program. It's the most expensive weapon system in military history. The Pentagon says that, you know, this is the 12th year in development, but it's behind schedule. Now you have technological flaws that have been a problem here. And what about the short flight range? That's a threat. You look at Asia, and then the other threat is what happens when Congress lops off a chunk of money to the military budget? You would have to think that this is going to be mothballed a bit. This is supposedly the Pentagon's answer to a state-of-the-art aircraft that would be adapted to three branches of the military, and that most foes could easily be overcome by this plane. It's a radar-evading jet, but tick, 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 time is running out. You know how much it costs for the average one? $137 million. It was $69 million in 2001 to build it, but now it's up to $137. So what does it mean? The jets would cost us $396 billion if they stick with this. And they hope to build 2,400-plus by the late 2030s. So that's four times as much as any other weapon system. You think it's worth it? I think it's cool. And the fact that it has to, or it has the capability of evading the radar is good. But because of where we are financially, I think that there's a good chance that this program becomes overnight unaffordable. Unaffordable for where we are budgetary wise with the military. I can't imagine it standing. I can't, because you do the math and that's a crazy number. Absolute crazy number. If you were listening at some point in the show, I told you that New York on Monday had no murders, stabbings, any of that kind of stuff. It was like a nonviolent day. It's crazy. 8 million people, city of 8 million people, five boroughs, the Queens and Bronx and Brooklyn and Manhattan. Nothing, nada. Long Island, nothing. That's amazing. They haven't seen statistics like that in a very, very long time. In the meantime, the Oakland crime rate took off because the city is losing police. So they say they're up to about 33 to 40 burglaries a day. Ugh, those aren't good numbers. And the city fears that that's just going to continue to climb because there's not the men in blue tracking them down, the flatfoots in the cars, whatever, because they've cut back so much on the police force. All right, and I have some sad news to tell you about, since I have confirmed this. Powerball folks say there have been two winners. Two winning tickets were sold, one in Arizona, one in Missouri. So I have people listening to us in both of those places. Maybe you're a winner. And then there were other people who won smaller amounts of money, but the pot was $579.9 million. At the time of the drawing, so you know what the cash option would be on that, $379.8 million. Tickets were selling at such a clip 130,000 a minute nationwide. That's amazing. Oh, everybody wanted a piece of this. And apparently someone in Arizona and somebody in Missouri, they're going to get to claim the prize. And, you know, who knows if it's a group of people or if we're talking about, you know, one winner here and one winner there. An 80-foot Norway spruce that got through Superstorm Sandy became a beacon of hope, or at least the season anyway, when it was lit up on Wednesday. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg and others turned on the lights at the Rock. There was thousands of people crowded behind barricades on the streets. It's a traditional thing that happens in the city. You have a video screen. It's got an image of the tree, because if you don't see from where you are, they want to make sure people have the best chance at that. And they've got 30,000 lights on the tree. 30,000 lights. The tree is from Mount Olive, New Jersey. How about that? A 10-ton tree. It was there for years at the homestead of the family for that long. Measured about 22 feet tall in 1973. And then its girth reached about 50 in diameter. So, wow, that's crazy. That is one big tree. And it's a tree I saw, but it was, of course, wrapped up. It had all the scaffolding by it because they were doing the lighting thing on Wednesday. So I missed the tree that was lit. You know, the tradition of Christmas trees being put up at Rockefeller Center started in 1931 when workers put the center up. You know, they centered the first one and put it up. And no tree was put up the following year. And in 1933, the first tree lighting ceremony actually took place. It's going to be up there till January 7th. And then what's really cool is it gets turned into lumber for Habitat for Humanity. Because think about that. It's so big. How great is that that they... That's what they end up doing with it. And the 80-foot tree comes down. Yep. All right, here's our last one. When we talk about numbers and week and counts, and I always say there's so many numbers, and every day the numbers just really pop out at me because that's, you know, ultimately that's what we're looking at when we look at some of these stories. So MTV, how old do you think MTV is? If you were thinking 30, ding, ding, ding. MTV, back in its heyday, was the bomb. 24-hour music. And it's really changed over the years because it's that's not what it's about anymore with iPods and other ways to get music. I mean, I don't know. Kind of the art of the video and music is a little bit lost anyway. So some massive changes have happened since 30 years of MTV. And you know, a lot of things that they've tried to do, they've had a hard time doing. They were the forerunners back in 1981. It seemed mind-boggling that there would be a 24-hour music video channel. And boy, we've come a long way since then, haven't we?
An awful lot of money for the stupidest idea I've ever heard.
I don't think they were just sketchy. I think they were extra sketchy.
Millions of people are going to get sick this winter from colds, flu, and other illnesses. Don't be one of them. Protect yourself with Supernatural Silver, a revolutionary new broad-spectrum antibacterial solution. Recent advances in silver technology have resulted in a silver solution that can be used daily to prevent bacteria, viruses, mold, and food poisoning, and help improve wound healing. Supernatural Silver is safe enough to consume every day, while powerful enough to destroy the causes of many serious diseases, such as strep, staph, pneumonia, colds, flus, and other harmful pathogens. This new technology has the ability to terminate entire colonies of harmful bacteria at several hundred times the effectiveness of colloidal or ionic silver solutions. The Science Digest Journal says silver is our mightiest germ fighter. It is virtually non-toxic and is emerging as a wonder of modern medicine. Go to SupernaturalSilver.com today and use the promo code SILVER2012 for 20% off. That's SupernaturalSilver.com, and like us on Facebook.